Welcome to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. I'm Karen Jagoda, and my guest today is James Saperstein. He's the president and CEO of Azure Rx Biopharma. That's AZURRX.com. And they're a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company specializing in therapies for gastrointestinal diseases. But the topic today is their new therapy to destroy the virus that causes COVID-19. So welcome to the show today, James. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with us.
Thanks for having me, Karen, and I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Thank you. I think we should start first with a little bit of a description from you about the mission of Azure Rx, just to give us a sense of where you're starting.
Sure. So Azure Rx is a NASDAQ company. We're a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company. We specialize in targeted non-systemic therapies for gastrointestinal diseases. Currently, we're located in Delray Beach, Florida, and we have our clinical operations group in Hayward, California. We have three products or three indications that we're developing. One is MS-1819 for cystic fibrosis patients. We have data coming out very soon on that. And we're looking at another indication, which is for checkpoint inhibitor colitis. And I'm going to talk to you today mostly about indication for COVID-19 for gastrointestinal issues associated with the virus.
So can you describe for us how the SARS-CoV-2 virus impacts the GI tract?
Yes. So let me first say just in terms of my background, I've been in this business for over 37 years, and a lot of it was spent in HIV and infectious diseases. And one of the things that we discovered later on in HIV is that the virus tends to hide in reservoirs. So it's very difficult to completely eradicate the virus in HIV. COVID-19 acts very similarly. We believe we're starting to see more data that it hides. It actually stores itself in reservoirs inside the human body. We believe that one of those reservoirs is the gastrointestinal tract. So niclosamide, which is the product we licensed in, will do two things. Number one, it's a micronized version, so it gets very well absorbed. And it has an antiviral effect at this dose that we have. So it's going to clear the virus, but also it's going to help clear the virus from the gastrointestinal tract. It's the drug is non-systemic, so it's not going to get completely absorbed, and it's going to get flushed out and take the virus with it.
And it's an oral treatment.
Correct. So niclosamide has been around since 1982 as an antiparasitic, and it's been used mostly in an injectable form all over the world, specifically in the third world, you know, countries like India. We have an oral, which is a micronized version of the product. There are other companies that are developing it as an injectable for COVID specifically. We're developing it as an oral agent for COVID.
And so which COVID patients are you targeting? We're hearing a lot about long haulers. And is that part of the mystery of why they are long haulers? Is this virus sort of hiding within the body?
Well, we need to prove that, but that's a great question. We believe that's the case. Even though you're actually seeing reports now of people that have actually gotten, you know, the two vaccine shots, you know, the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, and they're still getting sick. They're still getting the virus. And most probably because that virus has been in their system and it's hiding and it's in the reservoirs, and you know, you're eradicating a certain amount of virus, but there still is a small amount of virus that's affecting your organs. So patients are getting, as we know, brain fog. They're getting some cardiovascular events that are still occurring, and even some GI symptoms. We know that there's a study out there that shows that close to 50% of COVID patients still have positive RNA a virus in their stool samples. So it, you don't very, even though you may show that the antibodies have dissipated, you still there's a good chance you have the virus in your GI tract.
And I probably should know the answer to this, but it just needs a little bit of virus in your GI tract to multiply and to have some impact. It's not just a benign element that, your body is kind of handling, but it has the potential to develop back into a full-blown COVID-19?
That's exactly right. When you look at HIV, for instance, even though HIV hides in reservoirs, patients are still taking antivirals, which keeps the level to undetectable levels of virus in these patients. Right now, there really aren't therapeutics that patients are taking chronically. Yes, you have the vaccines. You have some of the stronger drugs that, like remdesivir, that are working in hospitalized patients. But when they're going back out or leaving the hospital, or even if they're not being hospitalized, they're not using any chronic meds to keep the virus at bay. So if you don't keep the virus at bay, it's only going to replicate within the host. It's going to keep growing.
And would a traditional COVID test pick up these remaining particles of the virus that are hiding?
Well, that's an excellent question again, and that has to be shown and proven. Because let's understand what these tests are looking for. They're looking for virus either in the nasal tract, you know, that's, you know, kind of dissipating from blood, or you're looking at bloodstream. In the nasal tract, you're getting it from lung tissue, and in the bloodstream, you're getting it, you know, from other areas within the body. If it's in the GI tract, unless you tap the GI tract, you're not going to detect the virus in there. And again, our drug is non-systemic, meaning it's not going to get into your bloodstream. It's going to be able to root out the virus in the GI tract. So unless you're scraping the GI tract or somehow testing the GI tract for the virus, you're not going to detect it. So there aren't any tests yet.
And from what I'm hearing you say, this would not be an uncommon side effect or a continuing effect of someone who'd already been suffering from more obvious COVID symptoms. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, you know, going back to your previous question too, and going off on what you just asked, think about what's going on in Asia. They're actually starting to swab. They're doing anal swabs on people to detect the virus. They're doing nasal and anal swabs. That's new. But you've got to be able to figure out how much virus is in there. If you clear from the blood, as you just asked, but if it's in the GI tract, you're not really clearing virus. Eventually, it's going to get reabsorbed, and you're just going to reinfect.
So tell us where you are in the clinical development for your drug.
Well, we are working with a CRO right now. Hopefully, within a couple of weeks, we can announce that we're starting our trial. So we do expect to start our trial this quarter, 2021, first quarter. And we believe with the amount of patients that we have in the protocol, we'll probably complete it at the end of this year, maybe first quarter next year, and be ready to report results to the FDA. We believe that if the drug works the way we think it's going to work, we've already tested it in animals, we believe that the FDA will fast track this.
And so is this considered a therapeutic? How do you describe where this might fall in that spectrum? Would someone take this as a preventative drug to keep the virus from even finding a home in the GI tract?
That's a wonderful question, and I'm glad you asked that, because that's not something I talked about in terms of preventative. But it definitely will be therapeutic. The way we're designing our protocol is to utilize it as a therapeutic to treat the disease. However, again, I go back to my days in HIV. I launched a product called tenofovir Viread when I was at Gilead. and that was used for HIV treatment. Later on, Gilead did some more studies, and they realized that you could use Viread along with another drug, FTC, that makes Truvada. You could use it as a preventative, and now you have prophylactic therapies for HIV. You even have a morning after pill for the HIV virus. So I'm not saying that we are going to do this right away for this product, but if we see that we can therapeutically treat people to reduce incidence of disease and help people get through the disease, we will certainly move forward to looking at using this prophylactically as well.
And we hear so much these days about the microbiome and how that affects so many of our other senses. And it seems to me what you're describing might also have some impact on other indications. And you sort of hinted at that at the beginning of the conversation. So can we circle back a little bit and tell us a little bit more about the broader picture here?
I'm sorry, you broke up on that question. I apologize.
The question is, what other indications might this drug be useful for? We hear so much about the microbiome and how it affects our brain, our muscles, and it seems to me that you're an expert in the GI tract here. So are you studying other indications in addition to the ones that you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation?
Yes, we are. So we're looking at checkpoint inhibitor colitis. So for instance, checkpoint inhibitors are very popular drugs in cancer. I'll mention some of the brand names. They actually have TV commercials on Opdivo, Ervoy, Keytruda. These drugs have been very successful in utilizing them in treating bone cancers, pulmonary cancers. And unfortunately, one of the side effects of some of these patients is severe diarrhea. And sometimes it gets so severe that these patients have to be hospitalized, or colitis, which is an inflammatory process in the GI tract. So we will be studying this drug as well to help reduce the inflammation in the GI tract and hence lower the incidence of colitis. First Wave Bio, who we licensed this product from, is also studying it right now in ulcerative colitis. We have an option to bring that in as well. So we will probably do a lot of research in the ulcerative colitis area. Right now, the only products really that are available, A, to treat the inflammation, to use steroids, which you cannot use them long term, or they're using some injectable products, which are very expensive. So again, we would be the first oral product available for treating ulcerative colitis and checkpoint inhibitor colitis.
And are those conditions fairly common? We see so many commercials on TV. There must be some broad audience for those commercials, but how common are those conditions?
Well, the checkpoint inhibitor colitis is not as popular, so to say, as ulcerative colitis. In the checkpoint inhibitors, you're seeing it about anywhere from 17 to 25% of those patients that are affected. So approximately 50 to 60,000 patients so far in the United States are affected by this, but this is growing. We expect that checkpoint inhibitors, you'll see 300,000 to 400,000 patients utilizing these products in the next 3 years. So 50,000 patients will go up much higher. Ulcerative colitis is a much larger audience. Millions of people suffer from ulcerative colitis. So if we license this other indication in, it's a much bigger study that we'll probably launch in 2022. But it's a much bigger and broader study. And you're looking at millions of patients that might be affected by this.
So before I let you go today, I just wanted to ask you to tell us a little bit more about your background. You hinted a little bit there about your work with HIV. Can you say a little bit more about the work that you've done commercializing drugs in the past?
Yes. So I started my career with Eli Lilly. And I'll come back to that in a second because I wouldn't want to touch on MS-1819 too. From Lilly, I went to Roche for 10 years and then Bristol-Myers Squibb, where I was the head of international infectious diseases. And I've been part of 23 commercial drug launches. I've led 6 of them globally. After Bristol-Myers Squibb, I went small. I went to Gilead Sciences and was then recruited out to Serono, where I ran the U.S. group of metabolic and endocrinology. And then I founded a company called Tabira Therapeutics, which we eventually sold to Allergan for $1.7 billion. That was also a GI indication for NASH. And I've been doing other companies since then, some smaller companies. So this is my 4th NASDAQ company. And I want to come back to the GI space. So when I first started at Lilly, we were launching human insulin. And at that time, most of the insulin used around the world was porcine derived. And we had the first insulin from recombinant DNA, and people were hesitant to utilize that. One of our products here at AzureRx is MS1819, which is going to compete against porcine-derived enzyme replacement therapy for cystic fibrosis kids and adults. And we believe, we have a humanized version of this. We're in phase 2B right now. We have a study that's reading out this quarter for monotherapy, and a combination therapy trial that's reading out next quarter. Second quarter, and we believe it's similar to the human insulin story, where we're going to be able to replace all animal-derived enzyme replacement therapy. So we're excited about that. So my career has come full circle. I started in the endocrinology space and infectious diseases space with Eli Lilly, and I'm back to the GI space after 35 years of working in infectious diseases, launching antibiotics, HIV therapies, hepatitis drugs, and antifungals. So it's been a unique and rewarding career.
Thanks to my guest today, James Saperstein, President and CEO of AzureRx Biopharma. That's AzureRx.com. Follow them on Twitter at AzureRx. I'm Karen Jagoda, and you've been listening to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. Follow me on Twitter at Karen Jagoda. Like us on Facebook at Empowered Patient Radio. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time.